So good afternoon, everybody. We're trying to keep the presentation concise, even though I have to say I saw a lot of comments out of the community today, and I'm trying to address some of the questions that jumped at me from seeing those comments. So I'll be trying to anticipate some of your questions so we can have a concise session today. I also like to remind us this is just the first quarter, so let's not overinterpret any of the numbers in our business. Now, we are very happy at Allianz to have had a good start into 2010 overall. Revenues were up 10.3% to 30.6 billion. This is the strongest first quarter we've ever had, and it was particularly driven by strong growth in life, health, and in asset management. Our operating profit is up 20.4% to 1.7 billion. However, of course, compared to a low first quarter in 2009, net income is a strong 1.6 billion, as you already know, benefiting from some gains that were not taxed in the first quarter. And our capital position remains very strong. Our solvency now stands at 168 percentage points. So far for the top-down messages, page four, you've noticed the usual quarterly results overview for revenues, operating profit, and net income. And we're happy with the development, particularly on operating profit and revenues, as I said, out of life and asset management, and the net income number is also very strong. If you turn to page five, please, you see the development of our shareholder equity. Shareholder equity position is up 8.2% to 43.5 billion. Let me remind you what is the content of the revenue reserves. It's net income accumulated, unrealized gains of about 787 million, and a positive FX position of 907 for the quarter. Now, on conglomerate solvency, again, as I said, 168 driven by increasing available funds. So we have, again, a very good position, and we've also, I think, improved our position on the rating side further, fundamentally. Now, conglomerate solvency ratio shocks you see on the next page, page number six. Here, we're very comfortable above our thresholds, and the impact on IFRS equity is also within our limit and our target parameters. So I don't really want to spend a lot of time there. We're very strongly capitalized, and that remains a pillar of our strategy in these very uncertain times. I remember just a few weeks ago when people said, isn't that too much? Now the picture has changed again with a discussion around sovereign coverage, and we're very happy to maintain our strategy for more than just a few weeks. Now, turning to page number seven, there was a lot of debate. What is our sovereign debt exposure? The overview on page seven gives you what do we have in terms of sovereign debt in Spain and in Greece, in Ireland, and in Portugal. And I'd like to remind you that we have been, and it's just not recent, we have been underweight relative to peripheral sovereign exposures. If you just take the Barclays Euro aggregate benchmark weights, that benchmark was for Greece at 3.1%. We are less than 1% on this one. In Portugal, the benchmark was 1.3%. We've been at 50 basis points. So we've been running a conservative portfolio, and we will continue to run a conservative investment portfolio, and we feel very good about the calls that we've been making. And again, you can expect from us a long-term orientation as an investor and to be ready for what happens in the marketplace. We'll probably talk about this more a little later. And I'm happy to field any questions that you have. However, I'd like to say if you want any particular country item or split on what sovereign versus covered bonds and ABNS, please go to Oliver Schmidt. He is going to provide you with the data. I don't want to spend a lot of people's time on individual items. You can get them through IR. Now, page nine, revenues show very strong growth. Particularly in life, health, more than 17% up. And as you will see later, this is not driven by short-term money. This is not driven individual markets. It's broad growth across the portfolio. We are very happy about it. And it's very profitable growth, as you will see later. Asset management growth is outstanding. We thought at in the third quarter with 33 billion, that cannot be topped. We had 37 billion in net inflows in the first quarter. So the success story continues. And P&C, we flattened out basically on an internal growth basis. We stopped shrinking. And as you see later, some of the price effects are coming. They're not terribly strong yet in the portfolio. But also, I'll remind you, and I will mention it later, the renewal price increases only partially price themselves into the first quarter numbers. Maximum of 40% are visible here. You see quite a few more effects, and we expect them at least for over the consecutive quarters of this year. And we have had some lower volume effects. We continue to clean portfolios where we do find prices inappropriate, and I'll show you that later. So overall, we believe the revenue side is very strong. Now, operating profit, the picture on page number 10 is more mixed, particularly because of the profit number for property and casualty. As we have announced, we had very severe hits from NatCat, 555 million, 5.9 on the combined, and then another that we call weather-related events. There were a couple of questions today. What does that mean? I'm just to try to remind you that our NatCat definition is a very conservative one. We have a high attachment point, and we reinsure a lot of that first internally before we give it to the markets. It's very different in other enterprises. So we have, over time, increased our net retention. So that obviously influences our results here. But sometimes we do have severe weather-related events like black ice that are not counted at NatCat, but they are unusually strong in their impact. We count them internally as about around 100 million effect in the first quarter that we would consider to be extraordinary. Offsetting was 3.5% runoff. We'll talk about that later. This is higher than the long-term average that Helmut has always announced, but it's not higher than what you typically see fluctuating over time. First quarter of 2008, we already had more than that, 3.6%. So this is what's really driving the property and casualty result in the first quarter. Life and health is up more than double to 812 after a weak first quarter 2009, and asset management at an outstanding 466 million. The corporate segment results stands at 251. What we have here is a continuous repricing of the net interest income due to lower yields. And then there is a technical effect that hit us this time. This is a lower IT service revenues. Last year, we had a one-off positive item that's taken out, and this number should sort of balance out over time. So in our, at least in my perspective, not noteworthy. Let's move to the non-operating items on page 11, couple of explanation points. First, very important, the swing in realized gains and losses and impairments of investment. There were a couple of questions whether we had, beyond the ICBC sales, huge effects here. This is not the case. I will later refer to other non-operating where we have a Hartford gain. But in the first column, you can see on the right-hand side what's been driven here. This is normal harvesting, no extraordinary activity for us to increase investment income. Interest expense from external debt stands at 222. It continues to trade lower with a reducing interest rate, thankfully also being priced into our debt service. Fully consolidated private equity investments are at 37 minus. We continue to sort of be affected by the crisis here on the large Emma and Roland and Selecta holdings. Restructuring charges are within the usual parameter. We obviously use the financial crisis, or have to use it, to restructure some of our businesses, Ireland, Portugal, and a few others. And then we have acquisition-related expenses. Here, the expenses for acquiring the Bean units at PIMCO are the key driver. We're happy to pay more this year because we think we make a very good deal. By the way, even taking into account, or especially taking into account, the recent U.S. dollar movement, so we bought actually much cheaper than if we had only bought this. Next year, we're buying more and paying more for higher operating profit. Now, a couple of people have asked, so what is going to be the future impact for the remaining outstanding units that you buy? We have created already reserves in the balance sheet for that. The future P&L impact that we are expecting from buying these additional B units that are still outstanding is around 190 million P&L impact. So that, I think, that helps you to compute some of the expenses and items going forward. So let me move then to other non-operating items. Yeah, positive at 66 million. This is impacted by the fair value adjustment for the Hartford warrants. Let me remind you, in addition to debentures and shares, we hold the warrants, and we had to increase the value of these warrants because the share price of the Hartford went up. So there are no changes in assumptions on volatility or interest rates, just purely the effect of higher Hartford share prices that we needed to book for. Reclassification of tax benefits in this quarter, not a major item. So that leaves us with the 259 non-operating. Let me just also remind you, particularly if you think about our bond exposure, whatever the peripheral sovereign risk is, that in the first quarter of 2010, we had a net gain position across bonds and equities of now 6.8 billion. I think that's quite an important number, particularly if you think about the fact that just 1 year ago, there was a negative 700 million, if you're comfortable. Obviously, these numbers can fluctuate quite significantly. Now, page number 12, you see the reconciliation of net income. Here, the one thing I'd like to mention is that our expected tax rate was 28%, around 28%. Now, this one is obviously lower this year, this quarter, because, and by the way, it's exactly 19.3% for those that are running the machine now. This is because we have realized capital gains that were exempted from tax. These stem mainly from ICBC. So that is what is really driving the lower income tax number. Discontinued operations for were zero. Thank you very much. And for Oliver Schmitz and your purposes, we have deducted the non-controlling interest, so you get the 115 that helps you with your spreadsheets. So that's the overview for the group, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to now move to the P&C segments. What is the summary here? Revenues are flat now at 14 billion, stopped shrinking. Net cat claims I've just mentioned, together with weather-related events that we call extraordinary, we are above 650 million. Operating profit, therefore, is down to 712, 26% over a year, very low number. And the combined ratio stands on a calendar year basis at 100.4. That includes 7% from net cat and weather-related claims and 3.5 favorable runoff, as mentioned. Now, when you go to page number 15, the only thing I can say about that is what I've been saying that at the year-end and at the last quarters, we focus on growing where the margins are good, and I'll continue to let go volume where it's not profitable. And in difference to many of the surveys we see, we remain sort of cautious around Germany, particularly around motor, and we are continuing to clean the fleet portfolio where necessary and other aspects of the book. We do that also in France where necessary and in Italy. And we want to make you understand that the U.S. number is heavily impacted by changes in the crop insurance program. So please are cautious with interpreting that minus 10.9%. AGC and S, we had lots of changes here, but also there we're saying there are a couple of market segments that are too competitive for pricing, so we're letting volume go if we don't believe we can make money. Credit insurance is still suffering from the credit crisis. A couple of customers are considering whether they want to really buy the product going forward because we raised prices quite significantly. Profitability here, however, is strongly improving, as you will see in a second. Now, page number 16 shows you the usual split in operating profit impact. I'd like to remind you on the right-hand side that we are still on a year-on-year comparison suffering from lower interest rates. As I mentioned in the last call, our investment income will stabilize at the level, that's what we expect, at the level of the fourth quarter of last year. But again, in comparison to the first quarter of 2009, we are down 77 million as lower interest rates get priced into the portfolio. And we have the deterioration in the underwriting result, a swing by 167 million to now an underwriting loss for this quarter of 83 million. The other position is really not meaningful. Now, if you look at the individual country perspective, you can really see the pervasive impact of NatCat in the first quarter. On page 17, I've given you additional information on the NatCat impact in the first quarter by country. And these are just the large exposures. I have not sort of added anything on the weather-related side where they're affected. So Germany is 3.6%, France is 8.7%, quite significant. The U.S. has had net cat levels that we haven't seen for the last 5 years, quite unusual for the first quarter. Reinsurance, of course, because we fund a lot of the internal reinsurance, is heavily affected as we increased our net retention. AGCS, particularly through the Chilean earthquake, 13.5%, very severely hit. And Australia hit, for those that didn't know that, we had two large hailstorms in Perth and in Melbourne. Just to give you a comparison, last year, which already saw some hits, was only 3.3%. So it's more than double the impact that we usually have. So this is what we call quite extraordinary impacts on the combined ratio through net cat events this quarter. This is part of the business that we run. So therefore, we need to look a little deeper on what is the underlying trend. So I'd like to have your attention on page number 18 that gives you the usual sort of magnifying glass on the underlying trends on the accident year loss ratio. Let me please start by looking at the upper left-hand side where you see the nine-quarter overview. Here you see in the red line the development of the accident year loss ratio, including net cat, and you clearly can see the jump up to 75.9. Now, in our mind, the good news is the green line. The green line shows you the excluding net cat nine-quarter development. And we discussed the last time that we were happy to be below 72%, and we wanted to look at the trend where it's going, and I can confirm what we consider to be at least stabilization when we are now at 70. Can I promise that it's going to stay 70? We'll see it over the year, but we believe, and we'll look at the right-hand side, that some of the cleaning activity that we've been taking on the portfolio and a decreasing number of very large claims, for example, in France that have hit us, gives us support to our targets. Now, on the right-hand side, you see the reconciliation of the first quarter 10 to the first quarter 09 on accident year ratio. Now, the net cat is about 3.8%. You see a positive development on credit insurance of 60 basis points, and we, by the way, do expect further positive effects. The price effect is only 10 basis points. Again, here, let me remind you that the price increases that we've had on renewals, it's just the renewal component, is targeted to be 2.2%, and that only gets slowly priced into the portfolio. The maximum of what we typically get is 40% in the first quarter, and that then has to be translated really into earned premiums. And then we get another 60 basis points on positive effects on the combination of frequency and severity. Now, actually, frequency is up because of the weather-related events. This is what I wanted to highlight. We had a lot of winter claims, so the positive severity effects is significant, and you see the reduction of the large claims that we've been recording last year and where we've been telling you we're working on reducing those, and apparently it's coming through, and we're hoping that the frequency effects will also abate over the next few quarters. Runoff, there were some comments that the runoff is unusually high. We always give you guidance to say that the reserves are priced to at least give us 2% runoff over longer periods of time. I think that's very clear. Now, over the cycle that fluctuates, if we come out of strong years like we've been doing that in 2008 and 2009, the runoff is higher. Towards the end of the soft cycle, that runoff number tends to taper off. And some of your analysis shows that. However, that is a little bit misleading, some of the analysis I've seen, because they always take the first-year development. If you take the second, third, and fourth-year development, you see that we are well-reserved. So a 3.5% runoff is a high number, but is not unusual for a first quarter. Let's look at 2008, for example. We had 3.6% in the first quarter of 2008. And on the right-hand side, lower right-hand side, you see the non-cat net cat versus the net cat exposure, and that clearly shows you that even on the numbers we had in 2009, we had quite some winter storms, particularly in France, we have more than doubled the levy this year, and that's without the exceptional claims. Now, the question really is, and I've read that in the comments, you have the bull and the bear perspective, and I'd like to give you what I would call the back of the envelope calculation, because people are obviously trying to figure out what is the underlying combined ratio? What does that mean on outlook and whatever? Let me stop here. Number one is we don't adjust outlook based on the first quarter number, right? We give an outlook on overall yield number, and we have sufficient volatility in the portfolio to believe it doesn't make any sense to adjust updates on a quarterly basis. But what I can say is that the overall targets we have for the year on operating profit of 7.2 in the fluctuation, we do stick and do commit to at this point. This is very important. But we typically have fluctuations between the various segments, and we believe we have a very well-diversified portfolio between asset managed, life, health, and P&C. So the weakness in one segment can be balanced by overperformance in others, as we see it in this quarter, and by the way, as we've seen it last year already. Now, looking at P&C, then what is the bear and the bull view? And I'm just going to give you my 5 cents, and you need to make up your mind what you believe in. I cannot run that number for you. Some say, well, you have 100.4 combined on on the calendar year basis. The excess net cat is 3.9. The excess runoff is 1.5. So really, it's a 98 combined, and that looks a little high, because that would mean you would have to have a 96 combined over the next three quarters in order to get to the target that you originally announced, plus minus 96.5. So one would have to say a 96 combined is not possible, even with a normal runoff. I find that extremely conservative, but then you can take that view, and particularly if you believe that net cat activity will be high, that would be one view. The other view is to say, you know, yes, we have had an excess and net cat related event, but maybe the runoff is over the year going to be more like 2.5% or something like that. So the underlying combined is more than 97. Then I need for the quarters 2 to 4, 96.5, i.e. the overall target, in order to come out with 96.6. Yeah? And that is why we don't call this a problem. We really depend on the development of the net cat claims. And so on the other dimensions, you need to make your scenarios. We feel at this point, if we can get NatCat under control, we'll feel quite positive. And there's more I'm not going to comment on with regards to the P&C outlook. Now, let's talk about expenses for a second. Page number 19, you see the development, a couple of exceptional items. As usual, you can say, I don't want to talk about them in detail, but we have overall costs going slightly up. By the way, also our revenues are slightly up. The cost ratio is up because we have had an increase in particular in other acquisition-related expenses. As Michael said at the year-end call, we continue to invest in distribution and to build net sales capacity in Germany, investing in new distribution structures. Now, on the other hand, we need to watch it, right? Every ordinary economist would say you need to make sure that your costs grow in line with your revenue base. And to be very clear, I'm not happy with the fact that our cost ratio is going up. Michael Diekmann is not happy either, and we're taking significant measures here. Particularly, I think we need to focus on distribution costs and make sure that we get more bang for the buck here. Now, let me turn to the operating investment income, page number 20. What you can see here is relative to the first quarter of 2009, about 40 million deterioration, but it's stabilizing, as I said before, at the fourth quarter and third quarter level, around 850 million interest and similar income. And we expect at level that level to for operating investment income to stabilize. Net harvesting is within the usual parameters, and the investment expenses as well. So overall investment income at around 774 is going to be a stable number, and that is obviously before any distortion in capital markets. Page number 21 shows you the development of the average asset base. It's going up, as it should be, because that's important for operating cash flow development. And our current yield now stands at 94 basis points per quarter. As to be expected, equity yields have recuperated to now 65 basis points. Dividends are back up, and we have some normalization in harvesting. Now, page 22 gives you the overview on the pricing. As said in the past, and we've really worked with our operations one-on-one to get a confirmation on their pricing forecast, the pricing impact is going to be 2.2% over the year. Again, let me remind you, the renewals price themselves into the portfolio just slowly. And on top of that, we need to see the nominal tariff increases coming through over the year. You can see what they have been and what they are targeted for the year. We are expecting significant nominal tariff increases in France and in Italy. You can also see that in the numbers of some of our competitors that they are raising prices, particularly in Italy. Spain, 1.3%. US is targeting 6.5%. The UK is getting 4.2% through, and Australia is getting 6.1%. In a number of the markets, we are pushing prices, particularly in light of the NatCat and higher weather-related events, and in a number of places the market is following. Again, it will take a while for these prices to come through. On the other hand, by the way, some people don't understand that the claims inflation already hits us early, because when we expect claims inflation, we do price that into our claims reserves. So all new claims coming in January 1st do already reflect the expected inflation. So we typically have a first quarter effect that's slightly negative, as claims inflation already is in the numbers, but the premium increases are not in the numbers. So be very careful in terms of forecasting pricing effects on the portfolio. Now let me turn, please, to Life and Health, page number 24. Here's the summary. Revenues up strong 18% to 15.4 billion. Operating profit at 812, investment income 82% to 3.9 billion, and value of new business at almost 250 million with a new business margin of 2.2%. I'll talk about these numbers in a second. Now, page 25, I really do like. Why? Because we're seeing the same picture now in Life Health that we like to see in P&C, is that we grow where the margins are good, and we do not grow or even shrink new business where the margins are not good. So, for example, in the Netherlands, the profitability of Life is currently low, so we don't want to write a lot of business there. Let me help you with interpreting the U.S. numbers. We had an extraordinarily strong first quarter of 2009. That is didn't repeat itself. The first quarter of 10 with 1.65, however, is a very, very strong quarter. So that's a sort of statistical effect here. And that means we're strong and growing strongly across the portfolio. Italy, France, Germany are all extremely strong, as is Asia-Pacific, which I'm very happy about, because the margins are also good there. By the way, in difference to many, I think, other participants locally, and even the Eastern Europe is stabilizing. So we personally believe that is very good news. Also, when you look at the revenue mix, whether that is IFRS, i.e. traditional premium, and premium from investment-oriented product, there we have a lot of demand coming back for pure investment products. So that is, from our perspective, good news. As it is on operating profit, page 26. And I'd like to look not only at the investment result, which you see on the right-hand side that had an addition of 322 million, but also the fact that we've been improving both our technical result and, more importantly, the expense result. I mentioned to you the last time that there should be no reason in a large portfolio like Allianz's that we cannot fund investment cases and new products internally and have to produce expense overruns. We have been working very hard on these, and they're going down, and I expect them very soon to be at least equal. Over time, by the way, we should manage our expenses well enough to actually make a positive contribution. So the trend here on these dimensions is very positive, and I'll talk about investments in just a second. Let's move to page 27. 27 shows you developments of our operating investment income. And I'd like to separate, as usual, interest and similar income from net harvesting and others. And it's very important to understand that the net harvesting number, and we broke that up in a number of components, impairments, effects, and realized gains and losses, is not, and that's very important, is not driven by a lot of trading in order to create realized gains and losses for shareholders. By the way, given our policyholder participation, we would have to move a lot of the portfolio in order to create the gains. So it's very important. The key driver is not having large impairments like we had them in the first quarter of 2009. So no extraordinary generation of profits here, and that's a very important message. The other one is that our net flows are positive now across the portfolio. You see that on page 28. In addition to interest income, market effects, and FX that all were strongly positive, we have positive flows across the portfolio, even in very mature portfolios like France and particularly Germany, we're having strong net inflows. So the operating asset base now stands larger than 4.2 billion euros. And you also see that on the pure insurance assets without investment in unit links. On page 29, that average asset base is now up to 325 billion approximately, or 14%. And it's very important because it helps us to drive investment income, despite the fact that obviously also lower interest rates are pricing themselves into our portfolio. Yield stands at 1.11, and equity as in P&C yields are back up to about 48 basis points. Let's talk about value of new business on page number 30. Present value of new business premiums very strong as already in the fourth quarter. This is very unusual because we typically have a very strong fourth quarter, not always strong in the first quarter. It's typically weaker. This year it's very different. I'd like to call it flight to quality here. And also our margin at 2.2 is very good. Also for comparison and calibration purposes, we do sell in some markets actually products with weaker margins. Italy, for example, sells a lot of bank assurance in the first three quarters, then the highly profitable agency business comes in the fourth quarter. So this needs to be borne in mind, and you also see that in other markets. So in that light, that number is very strong. Also, I'd like to remind the quants amongst you, we run our new business margin calculation on a very conservative basis. In comparison to competitors, we have different cost of capital calculations, so we believe on a like-for-like basis, our margins are at least as strong as all our other competitors. Now, I don't want to give explicit names. If you want any details, Oliver Schmidt will tell you how the numbers should be computed to be comparable. So that leaves us with almost a quarter billion of value of new business, and we will continuously push for stronger margins. And my last comment, and that's why I'm particularly happy, in this interest rate environment, having such a margin is not an easy fact. Now, moreover, page 31, the composition is very important. And when you look across Europe, Asia Pacific, and the US, we have now positive new business margins everywhere. So it's not the case that Europe is dragging along the rest of the world and where we always have a pothole. The U.S. is at a positive 2.1. Asia Pacific is a very good 1.6. And we have Europe at 2.6%. And you see the development overall. And I think that's very, very important. Now, asset management. Asset management is even nicer. I like actually the flow of the story, starting with PC and then life, health, and now moving into asset management is really nice. Third-party asset management now exceed 1 trillion, total assets under management 1.3 trillion, and the third-party net inflows continued in the first quarter with 37 billion, record numbers, and the operating profit stands at 466, which is truly exceptional. Page number 34 shows you what the AUMs are. As equities are growing, and it's not just market uptick in equities, as you will see later, we for the first time in many quarters have had positive net flows. This is, by the way, not true for the rest of the market always, of 2 billion. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that our restructuring efforts are really have taken hold and are also driving our equity business. Net flows on 35, I don't want to really comment on a really outstanding number. And 36, I think, is something to really think about for a little bit. Our net fee and commission income increased to more than 1.97 billion now, up almost 55%. The internal growth rate is actually 61%. And you see a performance fee number here. A lot of people have asked, so what do we do? How come? Because typically you have performance fees only in the fourth quarter. Now, a couple of comments here. The first one is, Performance fees are dependent on the product structure and the benchmark and how they're being computed. So a number of the products do now provide quarterly performance fees because that's what investors want to do. The other point is it depends on the level of outperformance. If you achieve outperformance very early in the year to a significant degree, then the performance fees are earned earlier. Important is they are earned and they are paid. They're not just computed. Can you calculate this number just by multiplying it by four? No, you cannot, right? Because as we know, markets can be very volatile. So that's the comment I want to make here. And a large part, obviously, of those performance fee come from the fixed income division, but equity products also contributed noticeably to this effect. Now, let's move to the composition of the operating profit on page 37, please. Here, in addition to mentioning the net fee and commission income moving up by 388 million to now over $1.097 billion, we have high operating expenses. All these assets need hands and feet to take care of, and they need computers and people to take care of. So a significant part of that is also investments in building the business. And, of course, there's profit participation in our asset management businesses that is going up as well. But we feel very comfortable because now the cost-income ratio stands at 58.2%. As a reminder, we believe that already 65%, what is the target, is already a systemic benchmark. So this is truly remarkable at this point in time. Pages 38 and 39 break this up along key performance indicators for fixed income. I think fixed income you can just take in and enjoy. On asset management for equities, page 39, you see the net inflow number that I mentioned and the assets under management and operating profit, which is back to profitability with 26 million for the quarter. And we hope to gain more here. Again, as I said, they also have performance fees at a level of around 5 million. What we really have to watch here is the underlying outperformance. That 61% has to move to 70%. That is the target. So I'm almost done. I just like to summarize what we've been trying to communicate to you. We had a good start into the year, we believe, with revenues up more than 10% to 30.6 billion, operating profit 1.7, and net income 1.6, and the very, very strong capital position, and life and health and asset management more than outbalancing the hit that we had to take because of NatCat and P&C. And now I'm happy to answer your questions.